Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Scheme by Sheldon Whitehouse is a political and investigative nonfiction book about the modern American Supreme Court and the forces that have shaped it. Written by a United States senator who has spent years focused on campaign finance and judicial politics. The book argues that the court did not move rightward by accident or by ordinary electoral change alone. Instead, Whitehouse presents a long-term account of how wealthy donors, advocacy networks, legal organizations, and opaque funding structures helped build a conservative judicial pipeline and influence confirmation battles. The book blends political history, legal commentary, and Whitehouse's own experience on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Its purpose is not simply to criticize individual justices or single rulings, but to describe a broader system of influence operating around nominations, litigation strategy, and public messaging. In that sense, it belongs to the growing body of books about democratic institutions under pressure. While standing out for its close attention to court capture, dark money, and the ethics problems surrounding the nation's highest tribunal, I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, dark money as the operating system behind judicial influence. A central topic in the scheme is the role of dark money in reshaping the judiciary. Whitehouse uses the term to describe political spending that passes through nonprofit entities and allied groups without full public disclosure of donors. His argument is that this secrecy matters because it hides who is financing campaigns to affect the courts, while preserving the appearance of neutral legal development. Rather than presenting judicial change as a natural result of legal debate, the book frames it as an organized and well-funded project. Whitehouse links this structure to a broader post-Citizens United environment in which large sums can move through advocacy ecosystems with limited transparency. He argues that this financial architecture supports nomination campaigns, media pressure, issue advertising, and legal advocacy in ways that are difficult for the public to track. The importance of this topic lies in the book's insistence that institutional outcomes cannot be understood only through formal constitutional procedures. Whitehouse pushes readers to see judicial politics as connected to campaign finance rules, donor networks, and organizational strategy. This makes the book as much about hidden power and accountability as it is about the Supreme Court itself. Secondly, the long conservative project to shake the federal courts. Whitehouse places current Supreme Court politics inside a much longer historical effort by conservative legal and political actors to influence the federal judiciary. One of the book's recurring ideas is that the court's present ideological direction emerged from decades of planning rather than from a few recent confirmation fights. He points to the development of a durable institutional network that includes donor circles, legal advocacy groups, and selection mechanisms for identifying acceptable nominees. In this account, organizations such as the Federalist Society play a major gatekeeping role by helping define which legal thinkers and judges fit the movement's goals. The book presents this not merely as partisan organization, which is common in politics, but as a disciplined effort to align judicial philosophy, donor interests, and political tactics. Whitehouse also emphasizes the Senate's role, arguing that confirmation norms were bent or abandoned in service of this larger project. By tracing continuity across administrations, he shows how court capture can happen gradually through staffing, messaging, and procedural hardball. This topic is important because it shifts attention away from isolated controversies and toward the institutional patience and strategic coherence that helped produce a durable, conservative majority on the court. Thirdly, from nominations to litigation strategy, another major theme in the scheme is that influence over the Supreme Court does not end when a justice is confirmed. Whitehouse argues that the same ecosystem supporting judicial nominations also works to shape the cases that reach the court and the arguments surrounding them. He describes a legal and political network in which advocacy groups, litigants, and amici can act in coordinated ways to advance preferred outcomes. The book suggests that this ecosystem helps elevate test cases, frame public narratives, and reinforce the court's movement toward results favorable to conservative and corporate interests. Whitehouse is especially interested in how legal campaigns can be staged over time. Creating the conditions for the court to revisit settled issues or expand doctrines in ways that transform public policy. His broader point is that control over the judiciary involves more than placing judges on the bench. It also includes cultivating legal theories, supporting strategic plaintiffs, and building persuasive support structures around major cases. This topic gives the book analytical depth because it treats judicial influence as an ongoing process rather than a single event. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how institutions outside the court can shape what the court sees, hears, and ultimately decides. Ethics failures, and the legitimacy crisis of the Supreme Court, Whitehouse connects court capture to a second major concern, the ethical weakness of the Supreme Court as an institution. Yerbaibe. The book argues that the court has operated with standards of disclosure and accountability that are too weak for a body with such enormous power. Although ethics concerns around the justices became even more publicly visible after the book first appeared. White House's analysis anticipated that the court's legitimacy would increasingly be tested by questions of gifts, relationships, recusals, and undisclosed conflicts. His argument is not just that individual incidents matter, but that the lack of enforceable rules creates a structural vulnerability. If powerful donors, activists, or aligned organizations can develop close social or political proximity to justices without robust oversight, public trust inevitably erodes. White House presents this as part of a broader democratic problem, because the court depends heavily on public confidence rather than electoral accountability. The book therefore treats ethics not as a side issue, but as a core institutional concern. This topic is especially important because it links the hidden financial world around the court to visible consequences in public life. For White House, the crisis is not only ideological, it is also a crisis of legitimacy, transparency, and confidence in the rule of law. Lastly, democracy, reform, and the fight over public accountability, the scheme is ultimately written as a warning about democratic accountability. White House argues that when secretive funding networks can shape courts, influence legal doctrine, and operate without meaningful disclosure, the public loses the ability to understand who is steering major national decisions. This concern extends beyond the Supreme Court to broader questions about voting rights. Environmental regulation, labor protections, reproductive rights, and the balance between public institutions and concentrated private wealth. The book's reform impulse is therefore central to its message. White House emphasizes transparency measures, stronger disclosure rules, and enforceable judicial ethics standards as necessary responses to the system he describes. He also points readers toward legislative and civic engagement rather than resignation. Even when the tone is sharply critical, the underlying claim is that institutional repair is still possible if the public recognizes how the system works. This topic matters because it clarifies that the book is not only an expose, it is also an argument about self-government and whether democratic institutions can resist capture by organized wealth. In that respect, White House places the judiciary within the larger debate over whether formal constitutional structures are enough when hidden money and influence operate behind them. In conclusion, the scheme will be most valuable to readers interested in American politics, the Supreme Court, campaign finance, and the ways institutions can be shaped indirectly by wealth and organization. It is especially useful for people who want to understand judicial politics beyond the usual focus on constitutional doctrine or the personalities of individual justices. White House offers a framework that connects nominations, donor networks, nonprofit advocacy, legal strategy, and ethics concerns into one sustained argument about power. Even readers who do not share all of his conclusions can benefit from the book's effort to map the infrastructure around the court, rather than looking only at decisions after they are issued. Its practical value lies in helping readers identify how influence moves through modern politics when formal transparency is limited. Its intellectual value lies in showing that debates about the court are also debates about democracy, secrecy, and accountability. Compared with many books on the Supreme Court, it stands out for treating court capture as a systemic political project rather than a sequence of isolated legal events. That gives the book a distinct place within contemporary criticism of American institutions and makes it a significant entry in the literature on dark money and democratic erosion. If you would like to support Sheldon Whitehouse, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.